Tonight, the government of the United States is at war with Japan. Therefore, in place of the United States Treasury Department program, For America We Sing, the National Broadcasting Company brings you the latest news from the Far Eastern war zone and from its experts on foreign affairs. The Treasury Department is relinquishing this time in order that an aroused America may be kept informed. We take you now to Manila.
This is Coach Carlin, speaking from Manila.
We're down here at the famous Manila Hotel on the edge of Manila Bay, where the Luneta and the world's largest covered pier, Pier 7, join to make a panorama of beauty. Well, I'm not able to speak to you longer myself, but I'm going to ask Don Bell and Ted Wallace to take over. Okay, Don.
Thank you, Bert Seiler. Good evening, America, and it's good morning to you from the Philippines. As a matter of fact, it's mid-morning. We haven't had much sleep this previous night, but we're still out on the job, and as Bert Seiler has just told you, we're on the grounds of the beautiful Manila Hotel overlooking Manila Bay. To our left is the Luneta. This is the spot which won the title for Manila as the Pearl of the Orient, and it's never looked more beautiful than it does this morning. Mid-morning, the sun is high. The breeze is cool, the waters from Manila Bay are gently lapping against the breakwater, and this is a morning of peace and serenity, the type that we usually have had for at least 43 years in Manila and in the Philippines. Ted, did you want to say something?
The palm trees are just flowing gently in the breeze, not a thing to bother them. The palm trees are still here, by the way, Don.
Yes.
Out of all the bombs we had last night.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we still have palm trees. I suppose you folks in America know that Manila did undergo a severe air raid last night. However, the damage wasn't too great. We understand just 7 hours ago, however, Manila underwent one of those air raids which has been characterizing the past 24 hours in the Philippines. Now, I think that it would be a very good idea for us to bring up a few folks here, since this is simply a personality broadcast. We would like some of you people back in the United States to understand how the civilians and the other folks here in Manila are taking this particular war that we have now. Now, for example, we have a young fellow here with us who is a typical Filipino. Pardon me, what is your name?
Jose Grifaldo.
Jose Grifaldo. You've lived in Manila all your life?
Oh, yes.
Oh, you have? Fine. Well, what do you think of last night's activity?
Well, last night for air raid is not so severe enough, but I think the morale of the people is still high.
Oh, excellent. Where were you when the raid took place?
I was at home. In fact, I couldn't slip a wink last night.
Don, don't you think we better clarify that? But Metropolitan Manila did not undergo an air raid.
I think not.
The air raid sirens, the warnings, were sounded in Metropolitan Manila, but the bombings were all out in outlying districts, military and buttons, principally. Is that right?
Yes, I think that's quite right. No bombs dropped in Manila proper, but however, I did keep you awake. Is that right?
Yes, I was awake all night.
Except you at home. Where's your home?
Down Santa Cruz, Manila.
Santa Cruz. Well, that's a good location. It would be a little bad if it burnt out down there.
In fact, it's in the center of the city.
That's right.
Well, how's your nerve this morning?
Well, in fact, this is the first time I've ever experienced, and I was pretty scared.
Well, it's not so true, but don't admit to a scrub. You're just a little puzzled by it all. All right, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, the gentleman you have just heard is one of the typical Filipinos who underwent our air raid here in Manila. He told you his feelings on his part. Now, we're going to bring on an American. Killing, sir.
Good lawyers.
I believe that you have a fairly important job around here, don't you?
Oh, I'm connected with Pan American Airways here at the Manila Hotel.
Oh, yes, you boys have had some experiences of our own, I imagine. Have you got anything to say about last night's air raid? How did you take it?
Well, I think it's just about the way Mr. DeFalden did, and I wanted to say one thing to the people in the street. Not to worry about us out here. Our slogan out here is the same as it's been in Britain, business as usual.
And keep them flying. Don't forget
keep
that.
Flying, that's right.
They were flying last night. You know what that means.
By the way, how long have you been in Manila or the Far East?
Well, I've been here just since April. They tell me I'm still a newcomer.
You're still a newcomer, that's right. You have to be here 5 or 6 years before you qualify.
Say, John, let me interrupt a moment. What are those big things sticking over the top over there at the edge of the Luneta?
Bert, that's the one thing that disturbs the beautiful peace, quiet, and serenity of Manila Bay at the present time. Those ugly noses sticking up under the noon hour of the mid-morning sky are anti-aircraft guns. I think we're rather happy to have them there, even though they do spoil the scenery a little.
No question about the guns or our being happy about it.
What do you say we bring in this young lad over here?
Mr. Mendoza, will you come over just a second, please? Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure and a rare opportunity to introduce to you one of the outstanding men of the Philippines, Mr. Kiko Mendoza. You probably think you know him very well. He's the manager of the Manila Hotel and a great guy. What do you say, Kiko?
Well, I would say that we had a very hard time last night, but everybody was busy with the wrestlers, and everything was smooth. All the guests were satisfied, and they went orderly to the shelter.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mendoza. I hope that a lot of people in America who've heard you today have an opportunity to come out and see your beautiful Manila Hotel and stay with you.
All right, now, Diamond Fred, our climb is up, and I think we better sign off here. This is Dirk Silent, Don Barlow, Fred Wallace, returning you now to NBC.
From the National Broadcasting Company newsroom in San Francisco, we bring you the NBC's expert on Far Eastern affairs, Upton Close.
Hello, Americans. The evening of the first day of declared war with Japan, let's take a glimpse over the moonlit Pacific. About 7,000 miles wide, the southern sector. About 3,000 miles wide at the top. About 8,000 miles from Japan, around the coast of Asia to India. Beginning this war picture, let's say that we're very thankful that we've had no news of any surprises at such an important point, for instance, as Panama. Apparently, it's all right. We trust that nothing will happen, but you may be sure the American forces are on guard lest something does. In Honolulu, we have news that things are quiet. Although the sound of guns have been heard, perhaps there's a naval battle going on not far from the coast. The connecting islands, which we've used to get from Honolulu to the Philippines, apparently are under Japanese control. They claim they have them under their flag, and they're boasting about it. We don't know about that. Anyhow, the Japanese fleet seems to be at the moment supreme in that area. The two actions that seem to be of greatest importance right now are the actions around Hong Kong, where the British are being very hard-pressed. Three attacks have been made on Hong Kong by air, and now an infantry attack is beginning on Hong Kong from the mainland of China. You know, Hong Kong is a little island that runs up to a peak about 3,000 feet high. And this cone, which sits in the blue ocean, is separated from the mainland of China by just a short stretch of water. You get on the ferry and go across to what's called Kowloon. It only takes about 3 minutes or five on the ferry. This Kowloon area extends back a mile or two, and then you hit the Chinese border. The Japanese are pressing from Chinese territory, that is, coming down from Canton, which they have occupied for a long time, and fighting their way through the Kowloon settlement, which is also occupied, owned by the British, in a sense. And from there, of course, they will try to get across the narrow strip of water to Hong Kong. We're told that the Hong Kong defenses are putting up a very brave defense, and that they're full of pep and energy, and so far show no indication of any intention to give in. Then there's another important action that we don't know so much about yet going on around Singapore. I've often talked to you about the importance of the Kra Isthmus. The Isthmus of Kra is that narrow place you look on your map, and you'll see it, on the Malay Peninsula, where the peninsula is perhaps about 25 miles wide. I've walked across it one time. The eastern shore of the Isthmus belongs to Siam, just a strip of it there. And on the other side, you hit the southern end of Burma. It's a very strategic point. Just south of the Isthmus of Kra are the great tin mines of Kuala Lumpur. And on up the Burma way, a little way, you come to the great English port of Penang, which is the center of English power in South Burma. And then, of course, you go down day and a night drive by car when you're taking it easy on that beautiful road, and you come to Singapore. We're also told that the Japanese are pressing over the marshy country, a terrible country to fight over, full of growth that comes up through the seawater, trying to get into the naval base at Singapore. The naval base can hardly be entered from the east side, and the west side is protected by a great fort. And so the news bears out that the Japanese are not making very much progress on this Singapore sector. We still wonder what the main Japanese strategy is. Are they simply putting up this huge hit-and-run effort to baffle us, waiting for some masterstroke to take place, perhaps to come from Germany, or perhaps to take place from the main Japanese fleet that hasn't yet shown itself, or what is the thing that we're to watch for? Let's keep alert.
From the San Francisco newsroom, you've just heard from NBC's expert on the Far Eastern affairs and the Pacific, Upton Close. We take you now to New York.
Now here's Earl Godwin speaking from the newsroom in Washington.
Good evening, folks. As I walked downtown this evening, the thought struck me that Civil Washington is going about its biggest, boomiest Christmas shopping, with the population teeming with extra scores of thousands of new people to Washington who came here for defense, but who will stay for war and victory. But the official Washington tonight is heavy and serious and tired, as it realizes that America is in the World War with a terrific blow on the chin to start with. Tomorrow night, however, the president goes on the radio networks at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to tell what's happened, maybe to explain in greater detail and graver detail just what to expect. America is now lined up side by side in a declared shooting war with its former lend-lease partner Britain, also at war with the same Asiatic members of the Axis. Japanese are claiming tremendous sweeps of victory. Can be expected that the American story will be adequately presented, at least tomorrow night. But at the same time now, the attitude here is not to play down the seriousness of this first encounter. One who must be nameless has expressed the personal view that perhaps after all, this first surprise attack and its dark results to the United States might have a constructive lesson to show that the Japanese Navy is no pushover. And parenthetically, isn't it odd that up to now, at least for a year or two, all of the speculation and the expert advice on the Japanese situation was that the military clique wanted the war and the Japanese Navy did not want the war, fearing that they would not be a match for the United States Navy. And I think possibly the United States Navy from now on is going to show them that their anxiety in that respect had some basis. But there are those here in Washington, and not only in private life, but in official life, who want to know why that Japanese surprise attack was a surprise and why so apparently successful. There have been rumors, mere rumors, wild rumors, loud rumors all day long, that a very high naval officer in the Pacific area would be or has been relieved of duty. But there's not the slightest evidence that such a rumor has any foundation. At the same time, the Navy and the Army have clamped down, not a censorship, but they just simply won't tell you anything. As one naval officer told me on the telephone a little while ago, he said, I couldn't even tell you the time. But the feeling grows that something that must be done to find out about this thing, and it finds expression in the determination of a Michigan congressman, Representative John Dingell of the 15th District, who will tomorrow in the House of Representatives demand that there be an inquiry of a court-martial nature of high military and naval officers to find out why it all happened. The Army and Navy, says Dingell, were caught off guard, if not sound asleep in the same bed. Why were not our forces ranging far offshore, he wants to know, to stave off this wide attack? And he gets out a statement, and he will follow it up tomorrow in the House, and in the statement, and possibly in what he will say in Congress tomorrow, he says this: it seems incredible to me as a layman that with full emergency, having been declared weeks and weeks ago, that preparations were not made to meet any eventuality, and that our forces were not in evidence to meet them far offshore. Fortunately for us, the Japs used only their planes. Had they the courage and foresight to attack in full force of their battle fleet, it is entirely within the realm of possibilities that they would have captured the stronghold while it slumbered.
I'm still quoting Mr. Dingle. The Navy seemingly tied up their battle wagons every Saturday noon, the more or less routine manner, and went to town until Monday morning. And when the Japanese arrived, there were not men enough to man the guns. The Air Corps was seemingly in the same position. The American people have the right to know, and I, as a member of Congress, demand to know who is to blame. And then Dingle goes on to list a large number of high-ranking naval officials headed by Major General H.H. Arnold, Deputy Chief of Staff, going on down to Major General Fred L. Martin, Chief of the Hawaiian Air Force, to determine guilt or innocence in the matter of the Hawaiian air defenses. Now, it may be that Mr. Dingle has something there. It may not be. He said he's going to try it. He told me on the telephone not long ago. I asked him if he thought he could get time to make this demand for a court-martial. He said, oh, yes, he could get the time. And if the Army and the Navy, or the government generally, didn't see fit to follow his suggestion for a court-martial or an inquiry, Mr. Dingle says that he will introduce a resolution, which, of course, would have to be passed by both the House and the Senate, demanding a court-martial. I do not believe that it's going to get anywhere right now, because typical of the opposition is the retort of Democratic leader Senator Connally of Texas, who says, briefly, having been told of Mr. Dingle's court-martial inquiry, Connally said, we have much more important things to attend to right now. At any rate, the American operations continue. A number of Japanese planes and submarines have been destroyed, and that was the statement at the White House this morning, and it stood all day long without any amplification or anything else. And that is all we know. We may get a full report. I think we will probably get a nearly complete documentation of the story tomorrow evening when the Commander-in-Chief, President Roosevelt, speaks to you, and the President will lay the case directly before the people in what I understand will be a 30-minute address by radio of the fireside chat character and variety. And for the time being, at least, the White House is GHQ, General Headquarters, for our side of the war, as far as you and I are concerned. And the President and his faithful, thoughtful, experienced Secretary, Stephen T. Early, will do the informing until further notice. Mr. Early said tonight something that makes you know that the Axis claims are a bit boastful. You know, we've been hearing of these German and Axis claims when they affected somebody else over in Europe for a long, long time, and now we have them right on our doorstep. And Steve says there's just so much German hot air about some of the stuff. He also, that is Mr. Early, again declared tonight that the official view here is that Germany pushed Japan into this war with the idea that such an engagement would deplete our lend-lease aid to Britain and China and other democracies fighting against the aggressors. Well, that would seem to be reasonable. But Mr. Early brushes that aside again as just so much German hot air. And not long after that statement, the government served notice through the Supply and Allocations Board, Vice President Wallace doing the speaking, that from now on it's an all-out effort to win the war. No longer is this effort being camouflaged under the almost worn-out term defense. It's now no longer a defense effort. It is a victory effort with a big V. And they figure tonight it's going to cost at least $150 billion. Odd bits of news appear. The whole staff of 60 people in the Japanese embassy are interned in their own house. And some enterprising reporter dug up the fact that they got $16 worth of lamb for the whole 60 people tonight. And that's all from Washington at this time.
We're now speaking from the NBC newsroom in New York. Here are some late war bulletins. Manila. Unconfirmed reports say that the Japanese have landed troops in the Philippines. The landing is reported on the island of Lubang, some 60 miles northwest of Manila. This same unconfirmed report says the Japanese gained full control of the island and its main town, also named Lubang. Prior to the outbreak of war, a numerous Japanese fishermen are known to have entered the Philippines illegally and established themselves on Lubang and several other smaller islands farther south. The invaders are said to have made their landing in the early morning hours. Lubang Island is mountainous and provides easy hideouts for potential fifth columnists. but there are no landing fields there. But we repeat, the landing report has not been confirmed officially. Washington, all members of the American consular staff in the international settlement at Shanghai are safe and well. This news comes from the State Department that the Japanese have closed the American consulate general. The 24 American consular officers at Shanghai and two other American officials are, at the request of the Japanese, living in the Metropole Hotel. Other members of the staff are permitted to remain in their homes. The Japanese say that all United States officers will be treated in accordance with international law and on the basis of reciprocity. Spokane, Washington. War has hit broadcasting on the Pacific coast. The four radio stations in Spokane went off the air tonight for an indefinite period on orders from the 2nd Air Force Command at Fort George Wright. The four stations ceased broadcasting at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. The order applies to all radio stations in Washington, Oregon, and eastern Idaho. A later bulletin announced that radio stations in San Francisco Bay Area went off the air at 9:15 Eastern Standard Time. Up in Canada, military authorities announced that the entire Pacific coast of Canada will be blacked out from dusk to dawn until further notice. Batavia, Netherlands, East Indies. British forces have broken up a Japanese landing party in North Borneo. The report lacks official confirmation, but does not make clear if this is the same action as reported by the British on yesterday. The Netherlands East Indies have issued a warning against possible fifth column actions and attempts by Japanese to land airborne troops. All inhabitants were warned not to leave their homes without identification cards. The Guatemalan Congress has just declared war on Japan, and Mexico and Colombia broke off diplomatic relations with the Japs tonight. Already 32 nations are involved in the present war, three more than in the last war. Chile announced that she will be represented at the conference of the 21 American republics called by the United States to discuss the Japanese challenge. Chile announced tonight that the United States had accepted her suggestion for an early conference of the 21 American republics to discuss the Japanese challenge. A report comes from London that General von Niesel, German Air Force expert, is now in Tokyo as an advisor to the JTA, the Japanese Air Force. The report is printed in the London Daily Sketch. Von Niesel was a former adjutant to Marshal Hermann Göring. World War Number 2 tonight eclipsed World War I in the numbers of countries involved. 29 countries were involved in the Holocaust of 25 years ago. Tonight, with the declaration of war by the United States and five Latin American nations, 31 countries are engaged in World War II. Tomorrow, the total is expected to rise to 40 when other Central and South American countries take a stand against Japan. The American public is going to get more official details leading up to and including the Japanese attack on the United States. This information is coming from President Roosevelt, Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy. President Roosevelt will address the nation at 10 o'clock tomorrow night. His address will be heard over this station. White House Secretary Early says that this Roosevelt speech will contain information on hostilities in greater detail than has yet been possible. Fort Sill, Oklahoma. Americans were given a new slogan tonight by the 183 General Hospital at Fort Sill. Its author is a former football player with the New York Giants, Sergeant Vito Greco of Buffalo, New York. Here is the slogan: Let's set the rising sun. Columbus, Ohio. There is no longer any Mikado room at the Fort Hays Hotel in Columbus. The management changed the name of its dine and drink spot to the Mandarin Room. The Chinese in America have a scheme to prevent their being mistaken for Japanese. The Chinese consul in Los Angeles explained the plan tonight. He said all Chinese would soon wear a lapel button to show their nationality. This is being done, he said, to save the Chinese from embarrassment and mistaken identity. This news came to you from the NBC newsroom.
The President of the United States has given us our cue.
He has promised inevitable triumph over the Japanese generals who attacked us. The work and the might of our people will give us a victory of the highest order. Do your part with work and sweat and more. Buy as many United States defense bonds and stamps as you possibly can. Make your dollars rain destruction on the Japanese. Turn your earnings into bombs and bullets in our war to annihilate the militarists on the opposite side of the Pacific. Buy defense bonds from your bank, post office, or savings and loan association, and buy defense stamps from your newsboy or retail dealer.
Ladies and gentlemen, the latest bulletins received at the NBC newsroom. Washington. The War Department disclosed tonight it had received a report that 50 planes and a number of ships of unidentified nationality were off the coast of California. The War Department reported it was checking the report. NBC, since receiving this bulletin, is also checking this report with its San Francisco and Los Angeles offices and studios. Street lights have gone out in San Francisco, a bulletin just handed us. Up in Victoria, British Columbia, they have just had a preliminary air raid warning. The warning, known as the Yellow Message, was flashed by the British Columbia Civilian Protection Officer to each of his units. The warning calls for an alert. It is a preliminary to the alarm sounded by sirens. And here is another bulletin from British Columbia. A complete blackout of coastal British Columbia and the lower mainland was ordered tonight. The warning was a precaution being taken because an attack by Japanese forces in the Pacific Northwest coast is imminent. 350 square miles in the Long Beach, Los Angeles Harbor District were blacked out for 2 hours tonight. It was the first trial blackout of the war out there. A quarter of a million people in that area were given short notice that their homes and streets would be thrown into darkness. The blackout area extended 35 miles along the coast and 10 miles inland, covering an area in which is concentrated great airplane and shipbuilding plants in the important Southern California oil fields. Police were on guard at all the important Long Beach intersections. Automobiles permitted to use only dim parking lights crawled slowly through the streets. Pedestrians experiencing their first blackout had difficulty making their way along the sidewalk. The NBC newsroom will be on the air with the latest war bulletins at the beginning of every program, day and night. This is the National Broadcasting Company.